name is Kobe Bird.
It's going well.
You are listening to All Access Pass, created by the Accessibility Collective on 101.9 CITR FM. CITR is a collectively run show that covers issues of inclusion, equity, and accessibility for people with diverse cognitive and physical abilities.
On campus and beyond.
We are broadcasting live from our studio in the AMS Student Nest on the traditional, ancestral, occupied, and unceded territory of the Musqueam people.
Hey, how's it going? Happy Wednesday. My name is Spencer, and I'm joined in the studio by Desi and Sarah, fellow collective members.
Hey. Can you hear her there? Oh, there we go. Nice.
last week, we talked about disability representation in TV and film. This week is part two, where we are going to feature interviews from KMR Talent Management from Los Angeles. First, Gail Williamson, who is the head of the diversity department. After that, we will be hearing from two actors who she represents, Catherine Crawford and Kobe Bird. Now, here's a song. Heads up, this song contains some explicit language, so this song contains explicit language, so tune back in to All Access Pass if you do not want to listen in like 4 minutes or so.
I set my radio alarm for 6:30 sharp. Took a shower and a shave while the sky was still dark. Got a ride from a neighbor cause the car wouldn't start. And when we got downtown, you know there's no place to park. I'm sitting at my desk by 9:15. Got a talking from my boss because I wasn't on time. He's half my age and his suit is more expensive than mine. At this rate I'll make a partner by the time that I die. But at least I'm not a said, at least you don't design posters for local indie rock thugs and have to deal with shady promoters who only want to pay with drugs.
Digitization is a program that provides resources and training for First Nations and Aboriginal organizations throughout British Columbia. Come out November 24th from 1 to 4 p.m. in room 2311 in the AMS Nest for a three-hour workshop that will engage participants in a conversation about the unique context of working with Indigenous cultural heritage materials, as well as introduce the tools and equipment necessary to digitize audio cassettes for long-term preservation.
Welcome back. You're listening to All Access Pass on CITR 101.9 FM on your dial. If you're just tuning in, we are talking about the representation of disability in film and TV. Up next is an interview I did with my fellow collective member, DP, and we interviewed Gail Williamson. She is the head of the diversity department at KMR Talent Agency down in L.A. KMR is one of the only talent agencies with a diversity branch. Williamson has placed talent on Glee, American Horror Story, and Shameless, just to name a few. Hope you enjoy the interview. Hi, Gail. How's it going?
It's going well, thank you.
Just to start off, I was wondering if you'd be able to tell us a bit about who you are and what your role is at KMR.
Certainly. Well, at KMR, Kazarian Majors Ruskin and Associates is a talent agency. And my job is to work with talent and find them roles in TV, film, and advertising and theater. I work in a department called the Diversity Department, and all I represent are individuals with disabilities. So I'm looking to, first of all, make sure that all roles, all characters with disabilities, see, when they're casting them, they see individuals with that disability for the role. And I also push the boundaries with, well, why couldn't that attorney be in the wheelchair, or why couldn't that student be deaf? I ask that question. I've been doing it here for almost 5 years, and I think in the last 5 years I've seen more forward movement for this cause and for including people with disabilities in television and film than I saw in the first 22 years that I did this sort of work. And I did this work previously through the California Governor's Committee for Employment of People with Disabilities in their Media Access Office, which was an advocacy group for inclusion of people with disabilities in television and film. And the purpose behind it was that feeling that the more people we saw employed in television and film and acting as if they had jobs in television and film, the more chances there would be of individuals hiring people with disabilities, of them being employed. So that was the purpose behind it at that time. So the time has come now where we're starting to see a little forward movement and, of course, some backward movement. I was just reading an article here on how many actors this last year, typical actors, played characters with disabilities, and it's very disheartening that we're still not getting the opportunity for people with disabilities to audition for all those roles. But I got to this place because I'm the mom of a young man with Down syndrome. He's not such a young man right now. He's 38. But when he was 11, he was running for Special Olympics, and Special Olympics was working with Procter & Gamble to cast a commercial of a young boy running. And Blair auditioned and got the role. And he had a wonderful time, and he did a really good job. And I thought, why shouldn't he be able to do this again if he did it so well? And I tried to find an agent for him. And whenever I sent a picture and a note, I was turned down because they said there just wasn't, you know, wasn't enough for individuals with Down syndrome. There was no reason for them to have representation. And at the time, the only person really known on television with Down syndrome was Chris Burke, the actor who played Corky in Life Goes On. Mm-hmm. It came on in when Blair was 10, so we'd had a whole season of it before he did his Procter & Gamble commercial. And my thought was, why shouldn't every child be able to turn on TV and see somebody that looked like them? So when I found the Media Access Office, I started there as a volunteer and developed their children's division, and then went on to work as a full-fledged advocate with all divisions of all ages of actors with them. So that's how I got, I guess, to where I am today.
That's wonderful. Thank you. How long has KMR been around?
KMR actually first started in the 1950s as the Wurtzer Agency. So it's changed names a few times along the way. In the late 90s, it was Kazarian Spencer and Associates, and at that time I was with the Governor's Committee, and I helped an agent here start a small division for the Diversity Department, a small division of individuals with disabilities. And over the years, it kind of waned. That agent passed away, and eventually his assistant left, and so there was no one really taking care of that community. So it kind of sat in other departments and was sort of revitalized back in when I came. So that's how we kind of started, with just the few people that were left, and then we've built the client list for this department since then.
How do you go about finding and matching the right actor for a role on TV commercials or movies?
That's a really good question. We're constantly looking for new talent. I take on talent who are working at being actors. I look for someone who has a passion, who has a desire, who is taking classes and working towards being a good actor. And so that's when I take people on. Sometimes they don't have much in the way of acting credits yet, but they really are taking acting serious. So I'll go ahead and work with them. And at the time I take them, I'm very clear that we're really waiting for that role that fits their disability. I'm not going to be pushing the envelope and try to see if I can get them in typical roles, non-traditional roles, because they just don't have the experience behind them yet. So, and then I have other actors who have loads of experience, and I'm out pushing the envelope for them. So first I build that client list. That's how it has to start. And then I read everyday breakdowns that include what characters are being looked for. We use different websites that are professional websites that have been made up for the talent. And I read, along with my assistant Nina, the breakdowns and see what they're looking to cast. And we go on and choose which actors we feel might be the best to submit and be considered for those roles. And so then hopefully you get an audition for them, and then we go from there and see if they get hired.
In terms of disability representation, in your opinion, do you think Hollywood has done a good job in researching and studying different disability spectrums when creating a movie with people with disabilities?
I think that quite often writers do a good job of researching when they're writing. I have, for many years, I've actually assisted with different writers along the way when they've wanted to create certain characters, and I've seen a lot of them do a really good job, and I've seen others not do a very good job, but writers seem to do their best. Producers and people who are concerned with the money, they quite often want to see a large actor in the role, a well-known actor in the role, rather than the actor with the disability. So that's where we come into the sort of the problem with moving forward. And if they brought on an actor with the disability, I mean, they've got built-in consultant there to make sure they're doing it authentically and correctly. But the actor, it's an interesting way too for the actor when they're on set and they have to like speak up for their disability, but they have to tell somebody else's story. You know, you may have someone who's a quadriplegic and they're telling a very different story than their own. Yet still there's some things that are authentic specifically to people who are quadriplegics, and they of course would have to say, you know, I wouldn't do it that way, this is the way I would do it, and share that when they're on set and working.
Hollywood often defaults to hiring well-known actors to play characters that have disabilities, and I just wanted to know how can Hollywood make hiring people with disabilities a standard practice?
That's an excellent question. It would be wonderful if it was a standard practice to hire actors with disabilities, just as actors. You know, just if you have a job for an attorney, you know, the guy could be in a wheelchair, he could be an amputee, he could be a typical actor. We just want the opportunity for our actors to get to audition. We want the best actor for the role. We're not going to always say it has to be somebody with a disability, but they're not given enough opportunity to audition for that. You know, if they didn't give Marley Matlin the opportunity to audition for Children of a Lesser God, we never would have had, you know, an Oscar winner. And there she is, you know, and they easily could have said, oh, no, we can't give a big role like that to someone who's deaf. We have to have someone else play that role. But they didn't. They took a chance, and they created an outstanding Academy Award-winning film, which is wonderful. So it's hard to say how it's going to come about that it's going to happen the way we want it to happen. But it's also hard for our actors with disabilities because they don't get the number of auditions other people get. They don't get enough experience. And when they get an audition, it's often for a large role, a co-star on a show with their disability. I mean, a guest star on a show with their disability. And they haven't had the zillions of auditions everybody else has had. So their nerves are a little more present when they go in on an audition. They haven't had as much experience, and so it's harder for them to land those bigger roles. They're just sort of missing a rung on the ladder to making it to win over casting directors and producers.
That sounds great. So last week on All Access Pass, the collective teammates and us, we talked about a variety of films that talked about disability that have come out recently. We talked about Stronger Breath, Wonderstruck, as well as Older Silver Lining Playbook. Do you have any thoughts on any of these films in terms of the way they represent people with disabilities?
Well, I haven't seen all of them, so I really can't comment on how they portray individuals with disabilities. I'm sorry, I can't help with that.
That's okay. But have you seen any films?
I've seen Silver Lining Playbook, but I haven't seen Stronger or Wonderstruck yet.
Okay.
What advice would you give to a young actor with a disability wanting to get into the business?
First, have your day job, just like every other actor. You can't rely on just your acting to support you. It's just, even if it happens for a short while, it'll go away very soon. So you have to have your day job. And if your disability prevents you from being, you know, a waiter at a restaurant, you're going to have to find whatever it is. I have two actors here recently who've left work to go do movies and then come back after doing movies. And they've actually, because of the way their work works, they had to resign to go do the film and then hope that their job was still there for them when they got back to get it again. So that's the first thing. Have your day job and know what that is. And then train, 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 network, network. Start training. Make sure you're the best actor you can be. A disability does not get you a job. You have to be able to be an actor. And you have to be able to be a better actor than the typical actors who want to act like they have your disability. So it's a lot of work. I would say if any actor with a disability or want to be actor with a disability finds anything else to fill their soul, run to it and do not become an actor. But if acting is the only thing you can do and you love it so much, then just throw yourself into it and do it completely. Make sure you've seen the best acting coaches, you've taken the best classes, you've met people in the business, you've learned from them, you know, with what they're doing, and just take it very seriously. But always have that backup job.
Okay. Why does it matter that people with disabilities are better represented in the media? What effect will that have on both people with disabilities and society? Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'll tell you, back in the early 1980s, when my son was a baby, he had Down syndrome, and I could walk into a restaurant with him on my hip, and I could silence the restaurants because people were so unaccustomed to seeing a baby with Down syndrome out in public. Now, that continued in his formative years. My husband talks about setting him down on the counter at the hardware store, and his back was to the cashier, and she was talking to him until he turned around, and then she just stopped talking and ignored him. And I don't think these people were being mean. I think these people just didn't know they could talk to that face. I mean, this was when we barely had children integrated in schools. Still, we had special ed schools, so children with disabilities were not interacting with the folks that were now working and in the service and serving, you know, customers. So it was a very different sort of world. Then Life Goes On came on the air, which had Chris Burke starring as Corky, a young man with Down syndrome. And the first year, it was just a really good role model for my son. He was 10, and he could watch this and see that he'd grow up and have a life after 10 years old. Here was a high school student. So it gave him better self-esteem to see someone like himself. But then after that, we noticed in public, people were talking to our son now and accepting him and including him. And so it taught the world that they could talk to that face and interact with them, and that would be okay. So I think it's twofold what happens when we put performers with disabilities in television and film and theater and commercials. We teach the world that it's okay to include these individuals, and we help the others who are watching it on TV or film or commercials to go, hey, there's somebody like me. That's somebody like me represented, and that's a good thing. So I think it's very twofold in what it does for us.
Last but not least, can you share us any memorable stories that stood out to you as the head of the diversity department?
Oh, gosh, I probably could go on and on and on. I have, well, you're going to talk to Kobe Bird.
Oh, this morning.
Yeah. Did you talk to him already?
Not me, but one of our teammates did, yeah.
Okay.
And she said it was a great interview.
Well, Kobe's a great story because Kobe is 15 years old and on the autism spectrum, and he's a good actor.
Mm-hmm.
But actors who are children, who are under 18, between the age of like 15 and 18, quite often they don't get chosen to do the work because there's 18-year-olds who look younger that they would rather use because then they don't need to pay a studio teacher and they don't have limited hours that the individual can work.
Mm-hmm.
And when we met Kobe, and he's 6 foot something, and we said, you know what, you're a wonderful actor and we're going to support you and let's make things happen, but we might not find you work right away because people are going to be looking for someone older than you to play your age. And we've gone ahead and submitted him, even when they're looking for 18 and older, and that's what happened on The Good Doctor. And he just did such a fine job that they went ahead and paid for the studio teacher and gave up the time because he'll have to do 3 hours of schoolwork a day in his work day where, you know, someone over 18 could work all those hours. And Kobe did good enough that they took him on and he got the role. Another one right now, there's the tour of the musical Love Never Dies. It's the sequel to Phantom of the Opera, and in it the Phantom has three sort of ghouls, and one is a young woman who's a little person, and it's Katrina Kemp. And Katrina has been with us for years, and she's a good actor, a really good actor. But she also has a wonderful personality, and reality shows wanted her. They kept coming and asking her to be on these various shows. And we kept going, no, Katrina, don't. You're a good actor. We don't want someone to think you were on a reality show once so you thought you could be an actor. We want people to really know that you're an actor. And she continued to say no, and bless her heart, she got this world tour for a full year in Love Never Dies. And so, you know, we're so proud of her for sticking it out and waiting for what we knew would come her way. So it's you know, figuring out careers and working with individuals just gives us great joy here.
Wow.
Awesome.
Yeah.
I guess that wraps up our interview. Thank you so much. DP, do you want to say anything?
You're welcome.
Yeah, no, do you like to say anything to our listeners? I mean, they'll be listening to this on Wednesday, but the mic is all yours.
Well, sure. Your viewers, if there's any viewers out there with disabilities that really, really want to be actors, they're, you know, more than welcome to look me up at KMR and Gail Williamson. I think my email's on the website. And send me information. I'll do my best to respond, but they better make sure they're working really hard to be an actor. It's not just a pipe dream, but it's something they're going to be serious about. But I'm only as good as the talent I have, and I want to make sure I have the best talent.
Wow. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you. I definitely learned a lot by talking to you, so thank you very much. Hope you enjoyed our interview with Gail Williamson from KMR. Up next, full speed ahead to our next interview with Colby Bird from The Good Doctor.
Hi, my name is Colby Bird. I'm 15 years old. I have been acting since I was around 8 years old. I've been in some films. I was in one sci-fi film called Megabyte vs. Gatorade. I was a kid, and I was on the show Speechless. I guest starred as a character named Oliver, and I was Liam West on The Good Doctor.
Great. So I was hoping you could tell me a bit about how you got started in acting.
Okay. I did start acting when I was around 8. It was for this sci-fi movie called Megabyte vs. Gatorade, like this really cheesy kind of, like one of those really cheesy, like those fun types of movies. And we were dropping off our friend our neighbor who actually was going to be in the movie. So we dropped him off and we just hung around, and the director saw me, and I was wearing a fedora and a Hawaiian shirt. And she wanted me to be in the movie. So I had a little camp. So that was the first time I was actually in the movie. I had like a little cameo, and that's kind of how I started acting. It was, I had a lot of fun doing it, and it was just something I wanted to do.
Great. And also I read an article or an interview with you where you talked about how you got involved in a theater program when you were in middle school, the Miracle Project.
Yes, that was about 5 or 4 years ago. I was 11, and I was just pulled out of school after being severely bullied, and it was this program called the Miracle Project, and it's this program where it's with kids with autism and all other disabilities, and we come together and we do shows and for kids who have hard times, we give them their own space, and we have all these different kinds of classes and shows, and we do all these really cool things. And my first year was at this school called the Help Group, and I had very little language at the time. I didn't really, I didn't talk much at all. So my first day, I was kind of shy. I didn't know what to do, and everyone was really nice, actually. I was surprised because a lot of people in my school weren't really nice people. They weren't really, like, they weren't really accepting or really nice at all. And I was surprised because I was kind of in that crowd for a while, and that's what kind of surprised me. So over the months, I kind of like I felt accepted, and I actually felt like an actual person. And that's when I started to come out of my shell. And they're kind of the reason I am who I am today, because they gave me my space. They accepted me for who I was. And it really was what got me on my shelf. So that's what happened.
Well, it's really good to hear. And do you think going into acting, and especially since you've gotten these bigger roles, have you noticed a difference in how classmates are treating you and how people have people been more accepting since then?
I'm homeschooled now, but now I have more language than and most of my sensory issues are gone. So it really, actually kind of really did change my life. It brought a huge impact on my life, and it's kind of what made me who I am today. And now I'm more social. I can talk more to people. I feel better about myself because I'm in this space where I can actually be social and outgoing and talk to people and actually interact with others other than being in the corner all the time with my headphones and because of the crowd and everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and also I wanted to talk a bit about the roles that you had. So especially your role on The Good Doctor. So you are a person with autism, playing a person with autism. How important do you think it is to have those roles portrayed on TV?
I think it's great because they're actually understanding the community and they're showing it on TV, which is inspiring other shows to actually have characters with disabilities, and they're doing always really, and I think it's amazing that they're actually portraying characters with disabilities like Down syndrome and autism and cerebral palsy and Asperger's and pretty much every disability, because they're actually showing that people with disabilities can be on TV and they can be acted by others who actually have the disability.
Yeah, I actually wanted to go over a bit more the fact that you are a person with autism playing a person with autism. So mm-hmm. How important do you think it is to have people who are actually living with a disability to play that disability?
I think it's really important because people who don't have the disability and who are playing it and who are portraying as characters with autism or other neurological disabilities, I feel like they don't know what it's like because they don't know what it's like, and for them to show it, they kind of don't do it. And a lot of people with disabilities are different, but it's just like some shows like Leap. There was a boy named one of the characters was in a wheelchair, and the actual actor wasn't paralyzed, and he didn't know what it was like because he wasn't in that situation. So I think it's really important for characters for actors with autism portraying as actual characters on TV with autism because then they actually know what it's like to go through that, and that's what's really important about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and also I wanted to ask, did you find anything difficult with playing someone with their own condition? Just because I know that, or at least from the interview, I feel like there's some differences between you and the character you were playing in terms of the amount of just how verbal you are. And was that kind of difficult to play, or how did you balance the two?
It really wasn't, actually. I I was a lot like Liam when I was little, but it was less movement and less language. And it didn't really trigger me at all. It didn't give me a hard time or anything. I actually knew what it was like to have autism, so I portrayed that, and in a way I was acting like myself when I was younger because I did act like that a lot when I was little. Like, I would have meltdowns or tantrums because everything was just too hard, just too overwhelming for me, and I wanted to be alone. So it didn't really give me a hard time, or it didn't stress me out or overwhelm me. It just I portrayed that character.
Mm. Yeah, and I also wanted to know what kind of feedback you've been getting, both as an actor from the general public and also from the autism community. Like, what kind of feedback have you been getting from your roles?
I'm getting lots of support, and I'm getting lots of support. I haven't heard any insults or people who are disagreeing with me, but mostly people are supporting me, and my fans are showing their love for me and supporting me, and they're supporting my career and looking forward on it, and that's great because people are actually agreeing with me, because we need more people with disabilities to be in the arts community, and it's really hard, and that kind of business is hard because they might judge you on by the way you act or by the way you move everything, and they won't let you be that character. So that's what's really hard about it. But I'm really glad that everyone's supporting me, because it really means a lot. And I want people to know that it really does mean a lot to me that I'm getting all this support and love from my fans and everyone who loves the show.
Mm-hmm. And what would you say to people who also have disabilities who are starting out in acting? Is there any advice you want to give them, or is there any thing that way?
It's going to be really hard at first, but you have to work really hard to do this. You have to work really hard. You have to make sure that this is what you want to do and that this is what you're all looking for. Because it's your job, and that's what you need to do. But it's going to be hard at first because people will be judging you by that. But soon enough, it really is going to change. Because for me, at first, it was hard. I get lots of auditions, and honestly, I don't get every single one of them, which is okay. I totally accept the fact that I don't get every single audition role that I had, but. It is going to get a lot better and more easier for you once you keep working as hard as you can, because acting is just a normal job. You have to work really hard to get far, and that's what I'm doing. It's what I'm focusing on. I do the job, and that's what matters. I just do my job, and I have a fun time with it.
And what are you thinking of doing next? Like, where do you want to go from here?
I'm just going to see what shows I perform when I get. I mean, I'm totally up for anything. I'm just going to wait. Focusing on my career, being an actor, and yeah.
Great. Sorry.
And I want to advocate for people who have autism, and I want to make sure that we're being heard, and that we want to be accepted like everyone else is.
Okay. Well, that's pretty much everything I wanted to go over. Once again, thanks so much for taking the time of your day to do this and for talking to me.
No problem.
Hope you enjoyed our interview with the good doctor's Kobe Bird. Up next is an interview with Catherine Crawford. Catherine Crawford has worked as an actress and model. She is a leg amputee. Her notable work includes her roles on Graceland and mostly NCIS New Orleans. Enjoy the interview.
So, hi, Catherine. Thank you for joining us today.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
How about we start really simple? Can you tell us, our listeners, a little bit about yourself?
Well, I am originally from South Africa. I immigrated to the United States in the late 90s, and about 10 years later, I joined the military. And unfortunately, during my time in service, I got injured, and that resulted in me becoming fully disabled. Unfortunately, I'm an amputee, and I also suffer from a range of other issues. But that kind of opened up a new doorway for me, and I decided to go into acting and advocacy work and public speaking, and I moved to Los Angeles shortly after that, and I now live here, and I do that whenever I have the chance to. I do a little bit of everything.
Nice. And what inspired your decision to get into acting?
Well, I've always really loved acting. I really enjoy storytelling, and I was always writing stories and you know, telling stories with my friends and trying to make little movies. And so it's always been a very big part of my my existence is kind of escaping the real world through storytelling. So it's been with me since I was a kid, but I only actually started pursuing acting as an adult. And that was actually after I had become fully disabled. It was kind of a motivator for me to change how I was living my life, to better improve my circumstances in the way that I felt was best for me.
And now that you've gone into acting and you've, you know, done quite a bit, has that changed your perspective on your own disability?
Not really changed my own perspective, but it's really opened up a whole new realm of how other people see me, how I never expected that people see me and people like myself who live with disability, and the kind of snap judgments or lack of education they have towards people like myself. That was the only thing that really changed.
What can you explain how you heard about or got connected with KMR Talent Agency?
Actually, that was a fantastic series of circumstances. When I first got to Los Angeles, I was just headstrong with this idea that I was going to take any job I could get, doesn't matter what it is. If it's work, it's work. And so I was basically representing myself and sending my information to any and everybody who was doing something that I was interested in. And I happened across this group of individuals who wanted to start a pilot show that revolved around prosthetics. And the pilot show, unfortunately, never really took off. A solid idea and kind of organized system of production never really came about. But the people that I met during that instance of where we were trying to see if we could create this television show actually really, really enjoyed being around me. They enjoyed working with me, and they saw something in me, I guess. And one of those individuals in particular was a gentleman named Casey Peretti, who's actually an amputee and a stuntman, and he's had his hand in multiple projects. He's got a massive kitchen with lots of pots. He's got a spoon in every single one. So he's always doing, you know, these new projects, and he was very interested when he met me and you know, really, really thought that I could help him with the projects that he had in mind. And so he contacted me for a project that we did with Autodesk, where we used a particular form of software that they produced in order to create a prototype device that could take me into extreme environments despite my physical disability of missing a foot. And Casey, after that project, was very impressed by my work and decided, hey, you know what? I'm going to introduce you to somebody. And he was the one who introduced me to my now agent, Gail, who works for KMR Diversity.
Yeah, we actually interviewed her yesterday evening, and she was very
lovely. Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah, she's very lovely. Okay, so right off, like, when Gail connected me to you, she said that you were on NCIS New Orleans recently as Lieutenant Krista. So for people who may have not seen the episode yet or are interested, can you tell us a bit about what that was like? What was your character? What was it like on set? Just, yeah.
Oh, yeah, I'll try to give them the best details I can without spoilers. I don't want to spoil anything for anybody, but... The character I play is, as you said, Lieutenant Krista Vreeland. She is, I believe, just separated from the military. She's dealing with the intense ramifications of the injuries that she suffered during her time in service. And she's currently in the process of attempting to rehabilitate herself and transition back into an ordinary, wonderful quality of life. As a part of this journey that she's on, she signs up for a rehabilitation clinic or program that's an experimental program that implants these special devices into individuals' heads, specifically individuals who suffer from stress disorders, such as post-traumatic stress syndrome, like she does.
Okay.
And this is supposed to help them inhibit the more aggressive tendencies and violent behavior that comes from these flashbacks or may come from having a triggered episode happen with individuals who have extreme emotional and mental disorders. And so that's the backstory of Lieutenant Vreeland. The characters that Scott Bakula plays, he's a fantastic gentleman, very, very funny guy. Absolutely hilarious. And then his partner on the series, played by Lucas Black, the southern accented gentleman, they end up getting into this case trying to figure out what's going on with these individuals. And unfortunately, Lieutenant Vreeland finds herself accused of actually murdering her ex-boyfriend, who is also a part of this program. And so they're trying to figure out what's going on and if she's really gone off the deep end and if it was caused by the program or if she's just struggling, and they're trying to get to terms with it.
Now, okay, so we're going to switch gears again here. Now for a bit of the nitty-gritty. So what we've been doing here is looking at, you know, broader topics of disability and Hollywood here on All Access Pass.
Yeah.
Why do you think it's important to have disability representation in films and on television shows? Why or why not?
Well, I think the why is that we need to get away from these tropes. Oftentimes when you see disability in media or any kind of difference, anatomical difference of a person, maybe it's a little person or they have some form of disorder that changes their facial features or makes them very visibly different from what you would call the able-bodied community. Those individuals are used as tropes, and we're trying to get away from that. That negative representation or inaccurate portrayal that's often very extreme. And it's made to prove a point, honestly. Most of the time you see disability is it's a lesson through disability. Either an able person becomes disabled, and through that disability they learn some sort of lesson or epiphany. Or the people around them have the same kind of results. They're often used as petty or victim roles, individuals that are subjected to violence or injury in some way. They're an identifier for environment, which means that they can be used as a prop device or a prop to signify, oh dear, this isn't a post-apocalyptic world. Obviously, we have mutants and people without limbs crawling out of the ground. Oh, it's awful. So we're used a lot as confirmers for environmental situations and emotional situations as well. We're used to confirm certain emotional states within film, whether it's sadness or anger, depression, or debilitation in many cases. And so these representations are very damaging, especially the ones that take disability and turn it into a villainous type of thing,
right,
where disability is used as an identifier for evil, as if that person is resentment, you know, full of resentment for their pain and their disability, and now they're going to take it out on the world, you know. And these things often, unfortunately, transfer into the real world. And so you often see these negative portrayals and representations actually being taken as real, as reality, mm-hmm. by the majority, the audience that is actually watching this. It's the same reason why it's very, very a bad idea to try and mimic the medical procedures that you see in some shows, because right. they're not actually real.
Right.
And it's for the same reason that we want to pull away from this.
Right.
A lot of the things that people see about disability is not real.
Right. So kind of something similar on that. So last week when we first started talking about disability in Hollywood, we looked at shows with able-bodied actors playing disabled actors. For example, the film yeah. Stronger, where Jake Gyllenhaal plays a double-leg amputee with the help of CGI. What are your thoughts on yeah. able-bodied actors being cast in such roles?
Right now, it infuriates me. It infuriates me. And the reason that it infuriates me is because we don't have a balance.
Right.
If the circumstances were such that an equal amount of disabled and an equal amount of able-bodied people were being allowed and given the chance to represent these characters, you wouldn't have nearly as much backlash as you do now. And the numbers alone speak for themselves. I mean, 95% of every disabled character is played by an able person,
yeah.
even though in the United States alone, we make up more or less 20% of the population.
Right.
And less than 2% of those characters online, on streaming services, on television shows, movies, are played by a person who actually has that disability or that physical anomaly.
Right.
And the frequent excuses for this are that it's not profitable.
Right.
In regards to Stronger,
yeah.
I was very angry when I saw Stronger, not
yeah.
only as an amputee, but as an actor who knows so many people who could have contributed
right.
to this, who could have played that role,
right.
and who has seen this play out before
right.
in many different shows.
Right.
And Stronger's problem is that a lot of people, the response that I get from them is the same as most of the other ones, and here's the problem is, well, we have this fantastical physical difference that needs to be portrayed,
right.
but we also need attention.
Right.
We need attention. We need to pull attention to this portrayal. And so they go, well, we need somebody famous in there, of course. But they don't think to put the name in a supporting role. They don't think to maybe try something else. They immediately go into, all right, well, we'll just get some green screen, we'll color out his legs, and we'll just stick some digital ones on there, and it'll look just as good.
Right.
And they use this excuse. Well, if we didn't use Jake Gyllenhaal, we wouldn't have, you know, garnered the attention that we need in order to tell this story. But when we hear that, we're like, what? And they go, well, yeah, no, there's nobody, you know, that's disabled that has a name. And our response is almost immediately, why do you think there are no disabled actors that have reputable, profitable names? It's because you're not letting us into the market.
Yeah.
Because every single time you start a film, the first thing you do is go, well, we need some profit here.
Right.
And you go to the same old names that you use.
Right.
But because these individuals don't match those physical disabilities, then they start up with the green screen and the special effects and the props and the...
Right.
For people like myself, not only is it very frustrating to see that, one, we're not getting jobs, but it's frustrating because it feels as though Hollywood and the world are saying, we love your stories.
Yep.
Oh, we love your stories. But we don't love you.
Right.
We don't want to hear you tell the stories. We want to tell them for you, on your behalf.
Right.
Why? Well, you wouldn't be able to anyways. You're disabled.
Right. Yeah. That's
and that's also
really
another
well
response I've gotten.
Yeah. For sure. I mean, I think that that's super telling when we have, like, actors that get Oscars for their accurate portrayals of a disability, for sure.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. And oftentimes, you know, there's these statements that, you know, being an able-bodied actor and playing a disabled role is an automatic door opener to a nomination. Mm-hmm. And it's been said for multiple films, Forrest Gump, I Am Sam, Rain Man, yep. You know, all of these films, even Daniel Day-Lewis, My Left Foot, you know,
yep.
All of these films and all of these kind of idealistic novelizations of disability have really pushed the industry in a way that is really negative to one of the largest minorities in the world, a minority that anybody can become a part of, yeah. which is absolutely astonishing to me that we don't have the representation and accurate portrayal that we do, considering that we are one of the few minorities you can actually become a part of at any time in your life.
Yep. Well, thank you for that. So I guess we're going to end off here with one last. That was quite the big question. We're going to end off here with kind of a lighter question here. So what are your goals for the future, acting, advocacy, or otherwise?
My goals for the future, I would love to be able to perform more. I have to make sure to pursue my healthcare needs. I have serious disabilities that unfortunately put me out of the running for full-time and regular work. So my ability to work is very sporadic, and I must recover for a very long period of time each time I do work. So meeting my health needs would be my first priority, to be able to do the things that I want to do. My ultimate goal is to get into the industry and help be one of the very many individuals that's currently also doing the same thing I'm doing, and try to pave the way and try to re-educate the industry and try to get them to realize, hey, we're in this together. We can all profit from this. We can all work as a team, and we can show each other the true nature of reality, the true nature of our lives. We can tell beautiful stories while also respecting the individuals whose stories we are telling. And that's the main goal that I have. And then outside of that, I want to start a nonprofit one day for kids so that they can have the financial resources and the educational resources they need to be able to pursue whatever art form that they want to choose to pursue.